For continuing in the Chaye Adam, we had learned that there are five rules when it comes to washing one's hands. We're going to discuss what foods require washing. And we said only bread that you make a motzi on requires washing. And the vessel has to be fit for washing. We'll discuss that. The waters have to come from human force. The fourth point is the waters have to be fit for washing, and how do you actually wash? So we said it has to be bread that you make amotzi on. Bread that's the basic sustenance of life. So he continues and says, Umitam ze halacha gimel, ha'ochel pat pachot mikabeitza. If you're going to eat bread less than the volume of an egg, kivandia, an average-sized egg, kivandia shomim deinom kabel tuma. So the Talmud repeatedly says, kezais of bread isn't tame. What does that mean? So there's a machlokas Rashi Tosfos, what that means. Throughout the Shas, it repeats itself over and over again. Does that mean that when you have less than a volume of an egg of food, it does not become tame, it does not become defiled? Or do we say it can become defiled, but it will not transfer tum'ah to other foods? Machlokas Rashi Tosfos. What does it mean it's not tame? So, being that there are those that say that less than the volume of an egg cannot become tamei, so then really you wouldn't have to wash your hands because that's not part of the institution of washing hands for truma. So then we say, okay, wash your hands, but we don't know if you really have to, so you cannot make a blessing over it. So yitoli adav ve'lo yivarech mishum safek. So now you know. You come down to lunch and they have shakshuka and kugel and salad, and latkes, and burekas, and you take with it a half a slice of bread. So you wash, and you make a motzi, but you can't make a blessing of al-natil siyadayim, because you're not eating the volume of an egg of bread. You're eating a lot of other things, but you ain't eating a lot of bread. Now, what I just said is not so simple. Right. So being that it's a suda, and so that deserves a much broader discussion. What would happen?
It's
a motzi. The question is, do you make a blessing on matzilas yadayim? So technically, on pata ba bekisnin, but I don't want to go into that. It's a long discussion. We'll get there one day. Yeah, but let's stick to what Chayyadim is teaching us.
I mean, there might be a sefek if you have a kibetza. It's also Friday.
Yeah, what kibetza is?
If you're not sure if you have a kibetza, perhaps a little more.
I think that you shouldn't make a blessing.
And perhaps it's even less than a kibetza.
Upachot mikazayit, next line in the Chayyadim, and if you're going to eat less than the volume of an olive, that's the olive with the pit, before you squash it down, there are those that say you don't even have to wash your hands for that little amount of bread. So your kid's eating his French toast and he has a little piece of crust left and says, Dad, I'm not eating that. So if you're going to eat it, some say you don't even have to wash your hands. You for sure don't make an al-tiyos yadayim, but you do make amotzi. Because blessings, birkot aninim, blessings over things that we ingest, that we enjoy, so there, even for a crumb, you make a blessing, right? Your wife's making batter, you stick your finger in, you say, I'm just checking, right? You have to make a blessing on that little bit. For a crumb, the second you enjoy it, you have to make a blessing. Others say you have to wash just without a blessing, as though it were less than the volume of an egg. And if the bread is not the main course, meaning, really, you're eating salted fish. They took you out to this great delicatessen. You went to order fish. With the fish, they're giving you a slice of bread to eat the fish with. But really, you're here for the fish. You're not interested in the bread. It's just a way of eating the bread, the fish. So then we're going to learn the halacha later on, how that works. Because you're not going to make amotzi on the bread, right? Okay. So we will see that in Klal Nun Vav Siman Gimel. Let's skip over there and see what he says. Klal Nun Vav Siman Gimel. So what he says here is that really that there's a machlokas whether you have to wash your hands when the bread is tafel, when the bread isn't the main course here. It's just coming as a support for something else you're eating. And that's why he says, if you're eating less than the volume of an egg, you don't have to wash your hands altogether. If you're just eating a little bit of bread, you know, sometimes, what's an example of that? What?
Croutons
in the soup. Okay. So then, you don't have to wash your hands for the croutons. You're talking about real croutons, right?
Yeah. Homemade croutons.
Homemade croutons, right. And if you're going to eat the volume of an egg, so then wash your hands without a blessing. That's what he says. But that's when the bread is like croutons. That's a great example. Even though in croutons you might say that I like the croutons. To me, they're not less important than the soup. A lot of people say they're more important, right? That was the advertisement they used to say on the radio, right?
Yeah.
The soup is the excuse. The croutons is the main course. Okay, so that's what he says over there. In Nunvav Gimel, he says that if the bread is an adjunct, it's not the main thing, you're really interested in eating something else, so then if you're eating the volume of an egg, wash your hands without a blessing, and if it's less than an egg, you don't even have to wash your hands.
So what I'm hearing from all this is that everyone who makes a bracha of anis yisai, be careful not only to eat a kazai, but also a kabeza.
Right? Mishnah Brewer says
what's
that.
Kibetza?
Right.
Which opinion?
I told you, an egg. You know what an egg looks like.
I know,
egg.
I know two opinions of kibetza. The Rambam.
I see one egg. I don't know. I see an egg. I know what an egg is. Yeah.
And that means even on Shabbat, people always say, make sure you eat a kazai. But really, they mean you should eat a kibetza.
Okay.
No? They made on a Tilati day.
Yeah, okay.
And on Pesach, don't eat a kazayit amat, eat a kabeit amat. You made on the Tilati Yadayim.
You guys are cornering me into a sugya I didn't want to go into. But if you're going to corner me, I'll answer you. Okay, Yochanan, now I'll give you the full answer to your question. The Mishnah in Tractate Kalim discusses how do you know what the size of a beitza, an egg, and the size of a kezias is. So, it would seem fairly simple. You get an average egg. You get an average olive that's called Zayit Aguri. I think if you guys are going to take me off this tangent, we should learn the Mishnah inside. Okay, so let's get Mishnayot Kelim. And
another question. You lost a nine. Enlightening my eyes.
Ah, very good. We're opening to Kalim, the 17th chapter. I think that's where it's at. Yeah.
No, you're just saying that. That is, dude. You're right. I'm barely into that chapter.
No, I haven't learned that. I'm just sounded it as some new chapter.
There are 30 chapters. Kalim is like Masechet Nezikin. We have two tractates in Shas that have 30 chapters. Nezikin and Kalim. And Nezikin was divided into Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. Each one has 10 chapters. Kalim was also divided into Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. We don't have the Talmud on Kalim, so we have it all bunched together still as Kalim, 30 chapters. But Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra were also once upon a time one tractate with 30 chapters called Tractate Nezikin. Okay. We're up to the 17th chapter, the 6th Mishnah. 17, 6, 6. Why? In Kalim. Masechet Kalim, 17, 6.
Rabbi Shimon,
what?
Correct. Yud Zayin Vav.
Rabbi Shimon, I'm looking for
a letter.
Don't you do that.
Gentlemen, you have it? Yes, Kibetza Shamru.
I'm also looking at the little letters. The big one, the big letter.
The little letter is a commentary.
No. Thank you.
Kibetza Shamru. When our sages said the word kabeitza, that we need the volume of an egg, so then lo gedola velo ketana ela veinonit. whenever we speak about a kibetza, we're not talking about the extra large, extra, extra large eggs. We're not talking about the mini, mini eggs. We're talking about the average eggs. Yeah, we're talking about chicken eggs. But in chicken eggs, you have six sizes.
Yeah.
So the average egg, the middle egg. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, you want to know how to get your average? Mevi gedolah shebagdolot. Get the extra, extra, super extra large. Get the largest among the large ones. Uktana shebagdolot. And the smallest of the small. Vinoten letoch hamayim. And then you put it into water, so you have displacement. And then you do the average in between. And then you'll know, you divide it in half. And the middle of the two, that's the average egg. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Sir Rabbi Yossi says, what do you want to accomplish? You're going to tell me, well, it's a little hard to evaluate what's the middle. So you're telling me, take the two extremities and then you'll get the middle. But I have the same issue with the extremities. V'chimi modi eini. Who's going to inform me? Ezik dolav ezik tana. What's the biggie? What's the smallie? When it comes to eggs, there are all kinds of sizes. How do you know you're going to get the biggest and the smallest? Ela kol lefi dato shel haroe. But you go by what you see. You go by what you think is the average. So
it's actually the mean. If you take the largest one and the smallest one,
right?
The mean.
So that's what Rabbi Yossi tells us, and that's how we go. That's why when you asked me what's an egg, so I said, you know what an egg is, an average size egg. Maybe here in yeshiva you don't, because maybe the yeshiva always buys small eggs. They're more economical. Every guy gets one egg, so you might as well get cheaper eggs, right? My wife always tells me that you could bake in all the cookbooks, they tell you how many eggs to put in. They don't tell you large, medium, or small, so you might as well buy the small eggs. You get the same...
I've never seen that big egg, maybe the double egg.
Okay. I've seen huge differences, yeah. Okay. We'll learn in order. Kegrogeret shamru. When our sages told us the volume of a fig. Logdola veloktana ala beinonit. Middle size fig. Rabbi Yehuda omer, Logdola sheberet Yisrael ya beinonit shebamdinot. The large one in Israel is the medium-sized one in other countries. And others have the version here that says the small one in Israel is the medium-sized one in other countries. And that's okay, the question is, how do we go? Do we go with the medium size of Israel? That's what Tanakhama holds. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we go with international medium size. Okay, very interesting why Rabbi Yehuda would say that. You notice that Rabbi Yehuda also was the one who argued in the previous Mishnah. Kezayit shamru. Most of the halachos in Torah are a kezayit, the vine of an olive. Lo gadol velo katan ela beinoni. Not too big, not too small. Medium-sized olive. Ze egori. That's the olive that's known as the zayit egori or aguri. The zayit, the olive that retains its oil within it. So that's the olive we're always talking about. Okay, so that's the zayit. That's our olive. The rest is basically the same idea. Again, each time we say, what do I want? I want an average one. Not too big, not too small, the medium one. And that's an aguri.
Only the egg is according to the eye of the beholder.
Oh. So that's a good question. That's a very good question. The issue is that we have a correspondence between the Shir Kezayis and Kebetza. A Kebetza is two Zaysim. The volume of an egg is supposed to equal two olives. So if you think of our eggs today, it pretty much works. An egg is about two olives. If you get an olive before it's been kvetched, that's what I said. Get an olive that still has oil in it. An olive before it's been all sapped of its...
So the aguri is a species of olive?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a type of olive that retains its oil. It's a good olive. Other olives, it says in the Jerusalem Talmud, as it rains, so some of the oil starts pouring out of the olive. The Zayit Aguri grows in a way that the oil, it retains its oil. Now, the olives that we buy have been put in brine or salt. They're totally different olives. You leave olives out in the sun and they get all shriveled up. It's a totally different olive. Yeah, sometimes if you go on the shuk, you see these nice size olives. You get olives that are almost the size of an egg. You go on the shuk, you see these huge olives.
We should get those for model seder this
year. Remind me? So, coming back to our Mishnah. So, approximately 500 years ago, they started measuring, and the measurements didn't exactly add up, because we have in the Talmud different places where the Talmud gives us correspondences between the measurements of hand width, the measurements of tefach and amma. It says you want to measure a mikvah. So you can measure it with your hands and it'll be this size, or you can measure the volume and it'll be that size. And it gives you the number of eggs, it gives you the correspondence in hand width. They checked this out about 500 years ago, and the hand's width was almost double the size of the eggs. So they came up with this idea that maybe the eggs got smaller, and the olives got smaller, and everything got smaller. And that, the first one that really came up with this, this really goes back. So this idea was presented by the Yam Shel Shlomo. This idea, I'm sorry, was presented by the Noda Yehuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, the Tzlach. And in his commentary on Psachim, he says, maybe everything got smaller and we have to use the larger volume, the larger measurement, and we have to assume that our eggs are half the size of an egg and the olive is half the size of an olive, and so we go with the harsher measurement. The truth is that this opinion, that if there's a contradiction, go with the harsher one, was already presented by Rav Yosef Karo in a letter. He got a letter from a community that said, you know, the measurements don't add up. And he said, I don't know what your problem is, because by me it works. In my community, there is no problem. But if in your community you have the contradiction, so then go with the harsher one. So we generally say as follows. We assume our olives are olives and our eggs are eggs. And if you want to know if you ate a kazayis, you go by a regular olive. And if you want to know if you ate a kibetza, you go by a regular egg. Sometimes you have issues that are biblical, like eating matzah on the Seder night, drinking wine on Friday night with your kiddush. In areas that are biblical, when possible, we go with that more stringent opinion, where we assume you have to eat two olives, otherwise known as the volume of an egg, right? You said two olives and an egg. So that's why what you brought up is less relevant, and what you brought up is less relevant, because on the Seder night, you're eating the larger zayis. You're eating the kibetza, really, because you're saying maybe the olives are half the size. So you're eating the volume of two olives. So you're also fulfilling the, according to the other opinion, you're eating the volume of an egg. Another, right. So if I'm saying everything is half its size, so when I'm eating the volume of two olives, of today's olives, so then I'm really... also fulfilling the egg of the other opinion. And the other opinion is really the prime opinion in halacha, meaning we really do go with this idea of that the egg is today's egg and the olive is today's olive, and that's how we go. So you ask me, who am I to call the shots between the giants of yesteryear? It's not me. That's a tradition I have, that even the Chazon Ish said it. And Rav Halberstam Zatzal told me that that's Minhag Yerushalayim. Rav Pesach Zatzal told me that he verified this with the Chazon Ish's relatives. That the Chazon Ish only said the more stringent opinion, b'deoraisa lechatchila. When you have a biblical commandment, if you could do it, that's the ideal. But if you can't, so then he seems to admit that the other opinion is the default opinion, and at the basis of halacha, that's when we go with. I didn't say that's what he writes.
Right.
I said that's the oral tradition I have.
Right. Okay.
Right. Lo mi pi asfarim, as we together learned from the Meiri. Ela mi pi asofra. Okay. Okay. after you hear the sofer, then you have to reread the sefer. Alright. Set up. Back to our halacha. So that's the answer to your question and your question. So that's why I didn't want to go into it. I just said an olive, an olive, an olive. But you're right. There are situations where you go with the more stringent opinion, if you can. Back to our Hayadah.
Is that what you do in Shabbat?
I think that what I do is not relevant to the class. Back to our Chai Adam. Huh?
Just to be sure. Yeah.
Exactly.
Halacha Dalet. Daval shetivulo b'mashke. Okay. Next area. We're up to again. Klal Lamed Vav. Klal Lamed Vav, page Kuf Pei Dalet. No. We're over here. Kuf Pei Dalet.
My dish is Kuf Pei Dalet.
Okay.
In the Yochanan Yehuda edition.
Davar shetibulo b'mashke. You have something you dip in a fluid. So let's see, what would that be? That's an apple in the honey for the night of Rosh Hashanah. Well, seven fluids, one of them is honey. So you're dipping your apple in the honey. You're dipping your sandwich in your son's chocolate milk. V'u'adayin lach. So your apple is still wet. Or, what would be another example? Kids like dipping their challah in the grape juice. So it's still wet. Even though you're not touching the honey part of the apple. Back in the day, when we were careful with Tumah and Tahara, so then you had to wash your hands. This was part of the institution of Netilas Yadayim, not only for bread, but for anything that came into liquid, into contact with the seven fluids, which are, remember the seven fluids, Yad Shachat Dam, right? Yain Dvash, Shemen Chalav, Tal, Dam, Maim. Yad Shachat Dam. Ach, achshav, ha'olam nogin lakel baze. But today, we're all lenient on this. Right? We don't really have to do it. Aval kol yirei shamayim yizel baze v'itol yadav. But a God-fearing person will wash his hands.
Wait a minute, it says that. It's like, well, you don't have to, but if you're God-fearing,
then do it. Okay. So remember, you don't have to. Okay?
I'm not God-fearing if I don't?
Yeah. No. Maybe you're God-fearing enough that you know that at this stage of your life, this is not worth the pressure. And will there ever be a stage where it is worth the pressure? Maybe not.
I mean, is it not so difficult to do? You know, like, so I'm pulling an apple out of my fridge and I'm washing it to make sure it's clean.
Nope.
And like,
nope, you can't, because it's these things end up gnawing at you, and they end up sapping your strength for doing things that are obligatory. This isn't obligatory. The Aruch HaShulchan says, we don't do it. Gemarnu, we don't do it. You ever see anyone else do it? You see people pouring themselves a bowl of cereal and going to wash their hands? I'm eating cereal. So you'll tell me, but I'm eating it with a spoon. But according to the Kaf Chaim you have to, you're in yeshiva full fired him. Haven't seen anyone wash their hands for a bowl of cereal.
Milk
is one of the halav.
isn't Yerei Shamayim really only a specific type of person?
You have to be on a level of a Yerei Shamayim.
What is
a Yerei Shamayim?
If you're a Shidduch and the girl says, are you Yerei Shamayim? Then your answer is like, no, because I don't wash my hands before.
Yehuda's trying to corner me because the Gemara in Kiddushin says that even Amoraim said about themselves, they're not Yerei Shamayim. So that's what Yehuda wants me to say.
I was thinking about something else.
I have salt on the table always because I'm Yerei Shamayim. You should have salt.
You always quote a story about Yerei Shamayim and all these other key words that are in Allah.
Right, but he was going based on Megamar and Kiddushin, which seems to be quoted by the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Yichud. But okay, I'm not going down that route today. Back to...
Yeah, bro.
Why not? Okay. because I don't have a tradition in the Chayei Adam when he uses the term Yirei Shamayim, how he means to apply it. So even though when you discussed with me the Mishnah Brura, so then I did quote you that, but that was with regards to the Mishnah Brura. Now we're learning Chayei Adam, and I don't know with regards to the Chayei Adam if we would apply the same thing. So I'm not going down that road. I didn't say that. I said I don't know. It might be all encompassing. I don't know enough to answer that question. I could give you the number of the posek who said it, and you could ask him. And the way I know him, he'll tell you Chayei Adam too. But if I didn't hear it, I don't want to say it. Back off the record. Back to our Chayei Adam. We're out of time, but let's try to finish the halacha. Umikor safek lo yivarech. So really, it's a safek whether you have to, so you don't make a bracha. Ven kavim mashkel shiva ilu vem shesimanam yad shachadam. So what liquids do I care if it comes in contact with? That's the acronym we said already. Yad shachadam is yain dam, which encompasses the blood of Beima Ve'of, but not Dagim, not fish blood. Now, we're talking about a scenario where you have to eat it. Sometimes that's a cure. You need to eat that blood. Shemen, Chalav, Tal, Dvash, Maim.
Even though you're only dipping the edge of your apple into the honey, you still have to wash your hands. To be continued.